Good morning. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show, literally across the state of Georgia now, from the North Georgia Mountains to the Florida line, from the Chattahoochee to the Atlantic Ocean. You can hear me all over the state. And we had a Democratic debate last night in Georgia. Joining me to get his take on this as the sun comes up across our beautiful state, Senator David Perdue. Welcome.
Good morning, Eric. How you doing, man?
I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I want to congratulate you, man. You're all over the state now, from Hayhire to Hiawassee, man. I think that's pretty cool.
Well, now I got to learn how to say all the names of some of the places. I know it's Cairo, not Cairo, down in South. I'm learning.
Yeah.
My South Georgia wife is correcting me all the time on how to say Albany. So, all right, Senator, you saw this debate last night. They're lashing out with this mythology that the Georgia election was stolen, and that you and Brian Kemp and everyone else are about to be swept out in a blue wave in the state.
Well, let me first talk about voter suppression, what they talk about. What you heard last night was scripted. You heard three candidates on stage give the same scripted response about that. It's a conspiracy. They tried to do this in 14 in my race. They tried to do it in 16. They tried to do it in 18. They claim voter suppression. PolitiFact today has an article, and the headline is, "There absolutely no proof of voter suppression in the Stacey Abrams governor's race in Georgia." None. Zero. So this is a lie right out of the pit of hell, and they know it. And what they keep perpetrating, because they believe if you keep telling a lie long enough, pretty soon people believe it's the truth. Well, it's not. Voters, the turnout in 18 was almost double what it was the last off election, and we all know that in 14 in my election. So this is a pipe dream. Also, what you heard last night was another pipe dream about what their vision of America is. They believe that this economic miracle of the last 75 years was a crime put on the American people, is the way they call it. And this socialist regime has been tried all over the world and failed, but they're still hammering it. Last night, Elizabeth Warren talked about that the crisis at the border was due to Trump, that Trump created the crisis, and that she would take down the wall. I mean, good Lord, Eric. I mean, these people have gone crazy.
I was struck by last night how no criminal needed to be arrested, but suddenly law-abiding citizens who are wealthy, successful, or involved in the petroleum industry, those people are the ones who need to be thrown in jail.
Well, this is a culture of victimization, and we know that people across all America know that's not who America is, and that's not the truth. But this fits their political mantra now. They can look. The Democrats can't talk about their economic prowess. Look at, well, under President Obama, we had the lowest economic output in U.S. history. They just about killed the economy. We can't look at their foreign policy. Look what a mess they left us with when they did the Syria reset, or the Russia reset, and the Syrian red line. They left us with a disengaged America and the rest of the world. We're trying to correct that. They cut spending in our military by 25%, so they can't talk about all of that. So what do they talk about? Oh, a new vision for America. We're going to go do what Russia and Cuba and Germany and Venezuela tried to do and all failed. But these guys are smarter than all those people, and they're going to take us down this road toward a socialist euphoria. It's a pipe dream that fits their self-interest, not what's best for America.
I was really struck last night how they said, for example, and Stacey Abrams has said this, that 70-80% of Americans are with them on abortion rights. And yet there's new polling out of Georgia from the AJC in what I think is a deeply flawed poll. And yet it still has you and Brian Kemp above 50% despite the fetal heartbeat legislation.
Well, it does. And I never put any faith in those polls anyway. That's the same poll that had me down 8
right,
to 10 points
exactly.
In 14. And we came back and won by more than 8. I know how that poll was skewed toward younger voters. I know that was skewed there intentionally, and others are as well. So, but, you know, what I keep looking at is what I hear when I travel the state, Eric. And people in the state want core values. You know, this is still a conservative state. The Democrats think this is a 50-50 state. It is not. Yeah, there are a lot of people moving in, but my God, Georgia is the for the seventh straight year, the best state in the country in which to do business. There's a reason for that. We have a state legislature that works. We've had three governors now that understand what pro-business means, and we are a business-friendly state. And we're also an education state where we provide great workers. So this is what brings jobs to Georgia.
Well, Senator, listen, I know we've got a lot of listeners down in the Bainbridge and Quitman and Cairo area, and one of the issues that came up last night was climate change. They didn't directly address the fallout of Hurricane Michael and the like, but Democrats have been an obstacle in the House and the Senate to finally getting funding for those farmers down in South Georgia. Heard a lot of talk about farmers in Iowa, but not a whole lot about farmers down in South Georgia.
Well, you know, I heard somebody say the other day they got athlete's foot and it was they blamed it on global warming. You know, I don't know how that works, but look, we had a devastating hurricane down there. We've had them before. We reacted to it. We came together as a state. We got down there and helped people. Now the president broke through the logjam. We've got disaster relief flowing. So, you know, the debate cannot be about the things the Democrats have failed on. So they're going to all these other things that are esoteric to try to distract and create noise around their ultimate failures of the policies that they have perpetrated. Let me just give you a couple examples. Since the Great Society was signed, first of all, in 1965, Lyndon Johnson took Social Security Trust Fund, put it on the budget, and then used the surplus in Social Security at that time to pay for the Great Society. And the Great Society failed in its war on poverty because in 2017, the poverty rate was the same as it was in 1965. And yet in the last 2 years, Eric, as we now know, 2.5 million people have been brought out of poverty because of this growing economy that we have created.
Well, you know, I want to ask you on that. Georgia has now tied the record low back in 1976 for record low unemployment. We've got a record number of jobs. The number of jobs that have been created in the state has been so good. And yet last night, all I heard from Democrats was we need to disrupt the success in our economy and I'm not exactly even sure that to help people who have jobs apparently but aren't billionaires. It really didn't make a lot of sense.
Well, none of it makes sense because none of the people on that stage have any real experience, no executive experience, and no experience in the free market system. So they want to destroy the free market system, move to state control, and then let the state decide these things for you. I mean, the Affordable Care Act was a good example. I mean, they want the state. They told you that if you wanted to keep your doctor, you could, and if you wanted to keep your insurance, you could, but you couldn't. And so the state dictated what you could do with your insurance and what you could do with your doctor. And this is only the beginning. When they start talking about the state doing all credit and things like that and doing away with small-town lending, taking over our lives, this sounds draconian because it is, and this is what they have in mind. They want to do away with the filibuster rule up here. They want to add D.C. and Puerto Rico as new states. They want to add 4 seats to the Supreme Court, and they want to do away with the Electoral College. And what they're describing is a one-party democratic system. It's a socialist democratic system because you really don't have a representative democracy at that point.
Well, in mentioning the private sector there, I noticed that Kamala Harris bragged openly last night on stage that she's never actually worked in the private sector. She's always worked as a government employee. And I'm kind of scratching my head wondering how she can be a president who understands the private sector economy when she's never even touched it.
Well, they don't even claim to understand it. They just don't want it. So because they don't understand it, because they've never participated in it, they don't understand how risk-taking, capital formation, innovation, the rule of law, great workforce, they don't understand all those components created this economic miracle. This is the greatest economic miracle in the history of humankind, and we've enjoyed it since World War II. And yet these people, including the lady who ran for governor in Georgia last year, says that, oh, no, that cheated everybody. If you're successful and you make a profit, you must have cheated your employees or your customers. And nothing could be further the truth, because if you did that, you wouldn't be in business for very long. And people who really have valid, real business experience know that.
Well, listen, before you get off of here, I know our time is short, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about impeachment at this point. I'm still wondering if the Democrats can't persuade any Republicans why they're even headed down this road, and would be interested in your perspective on it.
Well, first of all, this is a show trial. The headline of the Washington Post, Eric, and you've talked about this on your show, the headline of the Washington Post in January of 2017, when Donald Trump was sworn in, on that day, the headline of the Washington Post here was, and I quote, "The campaign to impeach this new president has already begun." So these people have been trying to undo this democratic process that we had in 2016 that elected Donald Trump. The bubble up here and all these career politicians on the Democratic side who have no experience in the free market system don't understand how this guy got elected, and they've been fighting and obstructing ever since. We've been fighting through. We passed regulation changes, energy changes. We produce more oil and gas than anybody else in the world today. We passed a historic tax bill that makes us competitive, and we freed up somewhere around $5 to $6 trillion that's coming back into this economy. And on top of that, we saved our small banks. Under Dodd-Frank, perpetrated by a supermajority by Democrats in 2009 and 10, we lost 3,500 community banks. You can only have to go to small town in South Georgia and see how devastated these small banks were. We've reversed that. The Democrats want to go back to what they did before and perpetrated this ultimate failure on the American people.
Senator, thank you for stopping by today and talking to me. I got one last question for you. I see these Democrats are out there trying to find someone to run against you, and they seem to be absolutely convinced that Medicare for All is going to be their winning platform, from Teresa Tomlinson to Ted Terry out there. And as someone who worked in the private sector and campaigned on fighting back against this, I would like your candid take, if you don't mind, on how you're seeing this Democratic field shape up against you.
Well, let me first address this. It's socialized medicine, and I have been in countries, worked in countries where that existed, and I can tell you it bifurcates healthcare delivery. It makes sure that people with money get great care and people who don't get mediocre care. And the worst thing about it is we can't afford it. I mean, look, Medicare Trust Fund goes to zero in 7 years, Eric, and they want to pile 81% of our workforce who get their insurance through their employer. They want to take that insurance away from them. Now, what's the state control here? This is the state telling you, you can't have insurance through your employer. We're going to force you to put it on this government-controlled socialized medicine platform that, oh, by the way, is going to zero. The trust fund goes to zero in 7 years. It is absolutely incredible that these people are even consciously talking about that. Look, my race will be what it is. I believe that Georgia, the people of Georgia know that what's trying to be perpetrated on them, in that governor's race, the lady who ran for governor raised 85% of her money from outside Georgia. These people in California, New York, and Illinois tried to come down here and steal that governor's seat. They're going to try to do it in two Senate seats, and we're not going to let that happen.
Senator, thanks very much for stopping by this morning. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Eric. It's always good to be with you. Thanks.
Senator David Perdue, he's up in Washington, D.C. today at work in the Capitol, but he called yesterday and said, hey, happy to come on and talk about the debate. Yes, you should come on and talk about the debate. I want to talk about the debate. Senator Perdue has had his say. I want to go on to commercial break, and when we come back, I will give you my say on the – it was actually a very interesting debate. Let me give you my quick hot take. If you watched the debate last night and you thought these people are nuts and there's nothing here for me, well, you were watching the debate in the wrong frame of mind. This was a Democratic debate for Democratic voters. If you're a conservative listening to me right now and you watched the debate last night and were horrified by it, that wasn't a debate for you. I actually give MSNBC real credit for running a debate where they actually ask Democratic candidates questions that Democratic voters want answered. And I think it's really striking that we don't get Republican debates like this. Republican debates are always designed to cater to the left, and the Democrats went full left last night with MSNBC, and we get a real sense of where they stood. But we'll get into the actual meat of it when we come back.
Honest news and conservative views.
Never separated from the truth.
It's the Eric Erickson Show.
Thanks again to Senator David Perdue for stopping by. You know, I got to tell you, I'm kind of proud of the work we're doing here, being able to have a radio show that is a Georgia-based show that can be across the state of Georgia now. So Georgia voters can actually hear from Georgia's elected officials in a one-stop shop. It's just great. And hearing from people from the White House as well, I'm happy we came up with this idea and are continuing to see it grow. We'll have some big announcements coming up on new stations picking us up. That really does put us across the entire state of Georgia. I got to get into the Democratic debate. We've got a lot of audio from the debate to play. To begin, though, we should set the stage that Joe Biden sent out a post-debate fundraiser saying he hoped he made everyone proud in the debate. The problem is he sent it out about 5 hours before the debate began. He had a number of gaffes last night, including that the only black black female senator endorsed him, and Kamala Harris said, no, that would be me. He meant the first black female senator endorsed him. I assume he was distracted. Congratulations to Joe Biden for having a new grandchild you did not know you had. Hunter Biden failed a paternity test in Arkansas. Apparently, he was taking the grassroots monitoring and the poll watching very seriously and has a love child in Arkansas. I think the headline out of this is that there's a love child in Arkansas, and the last name is not Clinton. It's Biden. Fascinating how the Democrats always go to Arkansas for their love children. But congratulations to Joe Biden for his new grandchild and for maintaining his lead after last night's debate. Listen, there was not a fatal blow to Joe Biden last night. There really wasn't one to Pete Buttigieg either. They tried to make it about his experience, and he pushed back hard on Midwestern versus Washington experience. I've got to tell you, though, my sense from watching people last night is that Republicans were impressed with Buttigieg's pushback, that he had Midwest experience and military experience. He didn't have Washington experience. And the Democrats, I know, did not like him pushing back aggressively against Washington, D.C. It was fascinating, the balance there. I am only now really being made aware of the fact that there are a lot of progressives who hate Pete Buttigieg, in large part because they think he comes across as too straight and too white. And he's gay. He's married and gay. And yet they think there's a lot of Democratic criticism out there now that he's too white and comes across as a straight dude. And so he gets demerits from the left for this. I don't understand this level of identity politics on the left. I really do not. I am happy to take your phone calls on the debate reaction. If you watched it or you heard about it, you heard the clips of it. The phone number here, the phone lines are open, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. That's 877-973-7425. You know, it was a good debate. Now, I got to clarify how I say this because I don't want your heads to explode. But this was the debate Democrats needed. A lot of the debates these days, even in primaries, are reporters trying to figure out how they can get politicians to connect with people on the other side. When you watch the CNN debate or some of the other debates that have been out there for the CNBC debate, the rest, when you watch them, what tends to happen is the debate moderators ask questions that don't try to probe the differences between the candidates per se, but try to find where those candidates might be able to make a play for the middle ground. And the Democratic debate last night, the moderators were willing to push them to the left and push them to go on the attack against the Republicans.
You have said already that you've seen enough to convict the president and remove him from office. Will you try to convince your Republican colleagues in the Senate to vote the same way? How central should the president's conduct uncovered by the impeachment inquiry be to a Democratic nominee's campaign? How central would it be to yours? After the bombshell testimony of Ambassador Sondland today, has that view changed for you? How central should the president's conduct uncovered by this impeachment inquiry be to any Democratic nominee's campaign for president? How central would it be to yours?
Mr. Beret recently told Congress, quote, "The majority of the domestic terrorism cases that we've investigated are motivated by white supremacist violence." Congresswoman Gabbard, to you, as president, would you direct the federal government to do something about this problem that it is not currently doing?
Vice President Biden, you suggested in your campaign that if you defeat President Trump, Republicans will start working with Democrats again. But right now, Republicans in Congress, including some of whom you've worked with for decades, are demanding investigations not only of you, but also of your son.
The Me Too movement has forced a cultural reckoning around the issue of sexual violence and harassment against women in America. Are there specific actions that you would take early in your administration to address this problem?
The Republican Party never stopped fighting President Obama in his 8 years in office. So what would you do that President Obama didn't do to change that?
Right now, Roe versus Wade protects a woman's right to abortion nationwide. But if Roe gets overturned and abortion access disappears in some states, would you intervene as president to try to bring that access back? Governor John Bel Edwards in Louisiana is an anti-abortion governor who has signed abortion restrictions in Louisiana. Is there room for him in the Democratic Party with those politics? Would you support a potential criminal investigation into President Trump after he leaves office, even if you thought it might further inflame the country's divisions?
Yeah, see, they let them have at it from a Democratic perspective. There was no trying to reach out to Republicans. There was no trying to reach out to moderates. It was drag the Republicans, burn their house down, impeach, take out the president, and move further left on abortion rights. And that's actually what we needed to hear last night. You and I on the extremism of the Democratic Party and how far left it has moved. But more importantly, having the Democrats to themselves. Republicans are so frequently denied this opportunity in the media. Republican debates tend to be focused on, well, how are you going to reach out to Democrats or moderates? And the moderators tend to be of the left, members of the media who lean left. This was a debate where you had a bunch of left-wing reporters asking increasingly left-wing questions to Democrats to find clarity on common ground on the left. And that's what the Democratic Party needs to find their person. And it looks like they're probably going to settle for Joe Biden. Joseph in Dalton texted me this. Well, I shouldn't say texted me. He emailed back this morning. He got the recipes yesterday, made them for breakfast this morning. I'm glad to be keeping people up in Dalton fed and the rest of the state as well. If you want the recipe list, text recipe to 33777. And if you want to call in and talk about the debate or impeachment, you can call here 877-973-7425. That's 877-97-ERIC, E-R-I-C-K. The Democrats on stage last night. You know, I said again, and I stand by it, that the debate was good because it was a conversation of the Democratic partisans talking to a Democratic crowd for a Democratic base. It was striking to me how they really wanted to send in a bunch of grievances, they wanted to amplify those grievances, and they even wanted to go after, like, what I was talking to David Perdue about at the beginning of the show, prosecuting oil executives who haven't broken the law. Here's Bernie Sanders.
About the need to make climate change a national emergency, I've introduced legislation to just do that. Now, I disagree with the thrust of the original question, because your question has said, what are we going to do in decades? We don't have decades. What the scientists are telling us, we don't get our act together within the next 8 or 9 years. We're talking about cities all over the world, major cities going underwater. We're talking about increased drought, talking about increased extreme weather disturbances. The United Nations is telling us that in the years to come, there are going to be hundreds of millions of climate refugees causing national security issues all over the world. What we have got to do tonight, and I will do as president, is to tell the fossil fuel industry that their short-term profits are not more important than the future of this planet. And by the way, the fossil fuel industry is probably criminally liable because they have lied and lied and lied when they had the evidence that their carbon products were destroying the planet. And maybe we should think about prosecuting them as well.
They're criminally liable, the fossil fuel industry. This is kind of ridiculous. But he wasn't alone in some of the crazy things. Elizabeth Warren had lots to say.
Let's talk about Medicare for All. Senator Warren, you are running on Medicare for All. Democrats have been winning elections even in red states with a very different message on health care, protecting Obamacare. Democrats are divided on this issue. What do you say to voters who are worried that your position on Medicare for All could cost you critical votes in the general election?
So I look out and I see tens of millions of Americans who are struggling to pay their medical bills. 37 million people who decided not to have a prescription filled because they just can't afford it. People who didn't take the tests the doctor recommended because they just can't afford it. So here is my plan. Let's bring as many people in and get as much help to the American people as we can. As fast as we can. On day one, as president, I will bring down the cost of prescription drugs on things like insulin and EpiPens. That's going to save tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars for people. I'm going to defend the Affordable Care Act from the sabotage of the Trump administration. And in the first 100 days, I'm going to bring in 135 million people into Medicare for All at no cost to them. Everybody under the age of 18, everybody who has a family of four, income less than $50,000. I'm going to lower the age of Medicare to 50 and expand Medicare coverage to include vision and dental and long-term care. And then in the third year, when people have had a chance to feel it and taste it and live with it, we're going to vote and we're going to want Medicare for All.
No, we're not. We've already got Obamacare. Remember, Obamacare hasn't been repealed, and people haven't liked it. And she's convinced that people are going to like the government. No, what's going to happen is they're going to undermine private sector health care insurance, so we're never going to be able to go back. Just bizarre. She also went off on John Bel Edwards. You know, she wouldn't say it. Rachel Maddow, to her credit, I thought it was an insightful question. She asked if there's a place in the Democratic Party for John Bel Edwards, the recently reelected Democratic governor of Louisiana who signed one of the most restrictive pieces of pro-life anti-abortion legislation in the country. It was more restrictive than what Brian Kemp signed in terms of our fetal heartbeat legislation. And Elizabeth Edwards wouldn't say, no, he's not welcome here. But she pretty much did say that by saying in her Democratic Party, everybody's going to be for killing kids.
Just this weekend, Louisiana reelected a Democratic governor, John Bel Edwards. He has signed one of the country's toughest laws restricting abortion. Is there room in the Democratic Party for someone like him, someone who can win in a deep red state but who does not support abortion rights? Senator Warren.
Look, I believe that abortion rights are human rights. I believe that they are also economic rights. And protecting the right of a woman to be able to make decisions about her own body is fundamentally what we do and what we stand for as a Democratic Party. Understand this. When someone makes abortion illegal in America, rich women will still get abortions. It's just going to fall hard on poor women. It's going to fall hard on girls, women who don't even know that they're pregnant because they have been molested by an uncle. I want to be in America where everybody has a chance. And I know it can be a hard decision for people, but here's the thing. When it comes down to that decision, a woman should be able to call on her mother. She should be able to call on her partner. She should be able to call on her priest or her rabbi. But the one entity that should not be in the middle of that decision is the government.
The government. You know, right now, the government is in the decisions, is it not? The government forces us to pay for killing kids. The government says it's a constitutional right. The government says we got to provide money. The government says we can't decide in our state. We don't want this to happen. It's crazy that she thinks it is government involvement. Meanwhile, the government is so highly involved. The government won't even allow, the federal government won't even allow states to say, hey, you got to have basic health care standards. What is very interesting, though, is that she refuses to mention John Bel Edwards. She cannot bring herself to talk about it. You know, she wouldn't campaign for John Bel Edwards. She doesn't want pro-lifers in the Democratic Party. And you know who that's going to drive out of the Democratic Party ultimately? Hispanic voters. Hispanic voters as a bloc are the most pro-life constituency in this country. And Elizabeth Warren's entire campaign, including her statements on health care, are designed to placate upper-income white people who live in urban areas. Those are the people who, even in the focus groups last night, resonated most with Elizabeth Warren. Rich white people in cities, they like her. I'll tell you who a lot of people are praising for a good performance last night. Surprisingly, Cory Booker, he had a standout moment with Joe Biden with one of his funny lines.
For the vice president, he is swarming into my office as a hero. This week, I hear him literally say that I don't think we should legalize marijuana. I thought you might have been high when you said it. And let me tell you. In our country is already legal for privileged people. And it's one, the war on drugs has been a war on black and brown people. And so let me just say this. With more African Americans under criminal supervision in America than all the slaves since 1850, do not roll up into communities and not talk directly to issues that are going to relate to the liberation of children, because there are people in Congress right now that admit to smoking marijuana, while there are people, our kids are in jail right now for those drug crimes.
You know, that was actually a good line from him. It stood out. It made him stand out. I was actually kind of impressed that Booker was willing to go there on several things. It's interesting he's not getting traction off the debate stage. In fact, he pointed out in his closing argument for why you should vote for him that he hasn't even qualified yet for the Democratic debate. Maybe he will. Joe Biden responded to him, by the way.
Number one, I think we should decriminalize marijuana, period. And I think anyone who has a record should be let out of jail. Their record's expunged. It'd be completely zeroed out. But I do think it makes sense, based on data, that we should study what the long-term effects are for the use of marijuana. That's all it is. Number one, everybody gets out, record expunged. Secondly, I'm part of that Obama coalition. I come out of the black community in terms of my support. If you notice, I have more people supporting me in the black community that have announced for me because they know me. They know who I am. Three former chairs of the Black Caucus. The only African-American woman that ever been elected to the United States Senate. A whole range of people.
No,
my point
no, that's
is,
not true. The other
that's
one
not
is
true.
Here.
So my point is, one of the reasons I was picked to be vice president was because of my relationship, long-standing relationship with the black community. I was part of that coalition.
I mean, he meant first, and I get that, but that was the only good debate performance Kamala Harris had last night. Hey, how is she so bad at this? You know, I got to be honest with you. I think if I were in a room with Kamala Harris and we weren't talking politics, we would have a good time. She has a jerk chicken recipe. I want her recipe. I think we could have a good conversation on a lot of stuff. She seems like a pretty personable person, and her Senate colleagues actually kind of like her. Even the Republicans do behind the scenes. But she's not good at this, and she comes across worse than Teresa Tomlinson running for the Senate here in Georgia. Teresa Tomlinson running for the Senate here in Georgia. Georgia is an opportunist, and she conveys, whether she intends to or not, that she would stab her own mother in the back to get ahead. And Kamala Harris kind of comes across like that. She did real good with Joe Biden early on the she was one of the black children in the buses who got better education that Joe Biden tried to stop and put him on defense and really dinged him, and her polling went up, and then she completely flubbed it after that. She cratered, and it's like she went on hyper defense or something. And I'm completely befuddled by Kamala Harris's performance. She doesn't know who she is on the campaign trail. She doesn't have consistent messaging on the campaign trail. Her entire performance seems to be on defense, and it just the whole thing is very striking to me. About how she's completely cratered and she doesn't know what she stands for. She doesn't have a position. I'll tell you someone else who probably burned bridges last night. I think that Tulsi Gabbard, she went after Pete Buttigieg, and I'm trying to find that clip. I haven't got it yet. I'm trying to find her exchange with Pete Buttigieg. I think she came out short of the stick. She shined against Kamala Harris and took Kamala Harris out. I mean, really. Wiped out Kamala Harris. If anyone is to blame for Kamala Harris cratering, it's Tulsi Gabbard. But increasingly, she's playing to a Republican crowd on the Democratic stage. This may be the last debate she makes it to. She's only here. No. She'll be in the December one. She did qualify because of Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton taking out Tulsi Gabbard, going after her, bumped her up. She's on this debate stage in large part for that as well. Here's part of what she said last night. Well, let's see. I'm logged into the wrong system, aren't I? I will get to Tulsi Gabbard here in 1 minute now that they've got these. So I use a database that plugs all the stuff up, and they're still loading all the clips. Let me get to Tulsi Gabbard here because, you know, she did say something that resonated again with a lot of Democrats or with a lot of Republicans last night. The problem for Tulsi Gabbard, though, is that the line that she used resonated with Republicans, and the Democrats got mad at her. Yeah, sorry, folks. This is me this morning. Everything is rerouted here because of my David Perdue interview. Here we go.
That our Democratic Party, unfortunately, is not the party that is of, by, and for the people. It is a party that has been and continues to be influenced by the foreign policy establishment in Washington, represented by Hillary Clinton and others' foreign policy, by the military-industrial complex and other greedy corporate interests.
You know, that will play well to the Ron Paul part of voters out there. That'll play well to them. it'll play well to some Republicans and it'll play well to some of the fringy progressives. But to make it about Hillary Clinton on a Democratic debate stage when precious Hillary is now viewed as a martyr is not something that's going to go over well with your average Democratic voter. Interestingly enough, I've got to note something here on Elizabeth Warren as well. Elizabeth Warren had a line in this about her wealth tax and how her wealth tax is going to cure the political divide. And one of the people who took after her was Cory Booker. I want to play Elizabeth Warren here.
Back to America for all people, all right, and not just for some.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Warren, you have cast yourself as a fighter. If you were elected, though, you would be walking into an existing fight, a country that is already very divided over the Trump presidency, among other things. Do you see that divide as permanent, or do you need to bring the country together if you become president to achieve your goals?
So I think the way we achieve our goals and bring our country together is we talk about the things that unite us. And that is that we want to build an America that works for the people, not one that just works for rich folks. You know, I have proposed a 2-cent wealth tax. That is a tax for everybody who has more than $50 billion in assets. Your first $50 billion is free and clear. But your 50 billionth and first dollar, you got to pitch in 2 cents. And when you hit $1 billion, you got to pitch in a few pennies more. Here's the thing. Doing a wealth tax is not about punishing anyone. It's about saying you built something great in this country, good for you. But you did it using workers all of us help pay to educate. You did it using your getting your goods to on roads and bridges all of us help pay for. You did it protected by police and firefighters all of us help pay the salaries for. So when you make it big, when you make it really big, when you make it top 0.1% big, pitch in 2 cents so everybody else gets a chance to make it. And here's the thing. That's something that Democrats care about, independents care about, and Republicans care about.
No, because they've already paid the taxes, too. We all paid our fair share already. And Cory Booker, to his credit, went after her on this.
No, again, I agree with the need to do all of those things. We're all united in wanting to see universal preschool, and I'll fight for that. We're all united in wanting to fund HBCUs. Heck, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for two parents that went to HBCUs. But the tax, the way we're putting it forward right now, the wealth tax, I'm sorry, it's cumbersome. It's been tried by other nations. It's hard to evaluate. We can get the same amount of revenue through just taxation. But again, we as Democrats have got to start talking not just about how we tax from a stage, but how we grow wealth in this country amongst those disadvantaged communities that are not seeing it. Look at VC dollars in this country. 75% of them go to three metropolitan areas. There is worth in the inner city. There is value in our rural areas. If I am president of the United States, we're going to have a fair, just taxation where millionaires and billionaires pay their fair share. But dear God, we're going to have pathways to prosperity for more Americans. We're going to see a change in what we see right now. Small businesses, new startups are going down in this country.
You know, that was a very compelling point from him for a Democrat, I think, to be on stage, because Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax out of jealousy plays well with a lot of Democratic base voters. And for Cory Booker to come in and say we're going to have just taxation, we're not going to do this cumbersome tax that doesn't work, that other countries have tried, and daring to say that on stage to his Senate colleague, I thought was a good thing for him to do. It was a good pushback. And frankly, the crowd liked it, too. Why? Because Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax plays well with rich white people, but no one else. Why? Because more and more people think if I get ahead in this country, Elizabeth Warren's going to penalize me for getting ahead. And that translates across demographic lines.
I really do like his opinion on things.
Eric Erickson, the information you need and the truth you demand.
He tells it like it is.
Live every weekday.
Tell you one thing that made Democrats mad. Of all the things to get progressive activists mad, it was this from Joe Biden.
When President Ford pardoned President Nixon, he said it was to heal the country. Would you support a potential criminal investigation into President Trump after he leaves office, even if you thought it might further inflame the country's divisions?
Look, I would not direct my Justice Department like this president does. I'd let them make their independent judgment. I would not dictate who should be prosecuted or who should be exonerated. That's not the role of the President of the United States. It's the Attorney General of the United States, not the President's attorney, private attorney. And so I would, whatever was determined by the Attorney General I supported, that I appointed, let them make an independent judgment. If that was the judgment, that he violated the law and he should be, in fact, criminally prosecuted, then so be it. But I would not direct it. And I don't think it's a good idea that we mock, that we model ourselves after Trump and say, lock him up. Look, we have to bring this country together. Let's start talking civilly to people and tweeting. You know, the next president who starts tweeting should, anyway. Look, it's about civility. We have to restore the soul of this country. And that's not who we are. That's not who we've been. That's not who we should be. Follow the law. Let the Justice Department make the judgment as to whether or not someone should be prosecuted, period.
You know, I got to tell you, I think he's right there. I think it is a third world country that goes after presidents after they're out of office. It's been my one hesitancy with a lot of Republicans saying go after Hillary Clinton. Yeah, was there injustice there? Yeah. Should she have been prosecuted? Yes. Is there a double standard there? Yes. But when you go down the road of doing this to a prior president or prior administration, you're setting the precedent they're going to come after you as well. And frankly, this is about the president's family. You go after Hillary Clinton, now Donald Trump, they're going to come after you and your family. That's regrettable. Something that shouldn't be done. And I think Joe Biden is right here. What I find most interesting is that there are Democratic partisans today attacking Joe Biden because they want him to go after Donald Trump. They want to chant lock him up on the floor. This is it's staggering to watch Democratic partisans go down a road that even Donald Trump himself has not been willing to go down for Hillary Clinton, though he's been tempted to, and to watch them get mad at Joe Biden for saying, hey, perhaps we shouldn't go down this road. When we come back, we got other stuff to get to, including impeachment. There's more hearings today, and we got some Georgia news to talk about, too.